Welcome to the Chasing Society podcast and the first episode of my series about the rationalization of society. This episode is a general introduction to the topic, and I've kept it as short as possible so you can smoothly immerse yourself in this complex phenomenon. If you enjoy it, please be sure to follow the show on your preferred streaming platform so you don't miss out on the next one. Thank you for listening, and now let's not waste any more time and get on with the show. The Rationalization of Society, Episode 1, Prologue. For many years I have resisted the urge to purchase a smartwatch, even though I could see some use for it. I didn't want to wear a watch that measures my movement, heart rate, sleep, running speed, walking distance, and what have you. I didn't want that because I knew that as soon as I would get data about all of these things, this watch would begin to exert some control over my daily life. I would look at the data and use it to set daily targets. For instance, when I realized on Wednesday that I had made over 10,000 steps on Monday and Tuesday, I would certainly make sure to get those 10K on every other day as well, irrespective of how tired I am. Same with jogging. When I have this watch, I want to make sure that I always cover a certain distance, and I want to do so within a certain time. I'm a very competitive person. And now you may say that this is not the worst thing in the world. After all, this may keep me healthy, and science has shown that 10,000 steps a day keep the doctor away, or whatever. And I would certainly agree with that assessment. Nothing wrong with being healthy. However, there is also something uncanny about the fact that numbers and data can enforce such control over my behavior. And moreover, that they have the ability to override my intuition. Because another way of going about my daily life would be to rely on how I feel. That is my bodily intuition. Is this walk actually feeling good now, or does my body tell me to sit down and relax? This dilemma of whom to trust, my intuition or the data, is, as I see it, a very typical dilemma in today's world. Think, for example, of a psychotherapist who needs to decide whether a patient should get treatment or not. In a country like Sweden, where I currently live, one of the first things that you have to do before you even get to see a real person is to fill in several online forms that check and score your symptoms. They also check your personality traits, cognitive functioning, and even your lifestyle habits. It's very survey-like. These psychological assessment instruments are in turn based on years of clinical research, at least that's what is claimed, and diagnostic manuals such as the DSM or the ICD that define various forms of disorders or diseases. As a psychotherapist, you cannot ignore or dismiss these manuals and the standardized tests with fancy names like EQ5D or PHQ9 or the Generalized Anxiety Disorder 7 or the apparently quite expensive Beck Depression Inventory. However, I think it's quite easy to imagine a situation where a patient may not entirely satisfy the predefined requirements to receive psychotherapeutic treatment, and where the therapist, nevertheless, and based on years of experience, recognizes that this person does need help. The symptoms may just not neatly fit the standardized criteria. And so once again, we are stuck in the dilemma between hard data, here the quantitative symptom scores, and the therapist's intuition or gut feeling, which may in turn be based on years of experience and hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of interaction with people who struggle with mental illness. Now, who should get to decide if the person gets treatment? The data or the intuition? Not many people will deny that standardized procedures and quantitative measurements play an important role in our daily lives. In sociology, we have a term for this tendency to standardize, formalize, quantify, and even calculate processes in all spheres of life, professional as well as private. We call this rationalization. On the surface, rationalization is about making things more efficient and measurable. but it also raises questions. Does it sometimes lead us to prioritize numbers over personal experiences? Does it shape our behavior in ways we may not always be aware of? As an AI revolution is looming, asking these questions may be more urgent than ever before. And I hope that by the end of this series, we have found some helpful answers. So without further ado, let us chase the rationalized society. Question 1. What is rationalization? So in this podcast series, I want to take a deep dive into the rationalization of society. In this first episode, I want to set the stage for this series and answer a simple question. What do sociologists mean when they speak of the rationalization of society? Before I answer this question, let me first say that, as always in the social sciences and humanities, different scholars can have different readings and understandings of theories and concepts. And the rationalization of society is no exception. While there is a commonly shared general understanding of what rationalization is, there is no shared definition, and different scholars are emphasizing different aspects. So what I want to do here is not to give the absolute best and correct interpretation and disqualify all others. I want to present one reading and one interpretation of it, one that I find both plausible and defensible, but not everyone will agree with everything I say here. I might take this into a direction that to some might seem odd or too permissive, and I may read something into it that others don't see. And I will probably emphasize aspects of rationalization that others find less important. So I encourage you to check out other sources as well and not use me as the final verdict on the matter. And with that out of the way, let me try to give you a first tentative answer to the question, what is rationalization? So a good way to think about rationalization is to think about us as being surrounded by a society that is keen on functioning as efficiently as possible and heavily relies on formalized and standardized procedures as well as mathematical calculations in all spheres of life to do so. We live in a society that confronts us with manuals, protocols, algorithms, and all sorts of standardized procedures and expects us to utilize those to organize the social world as well as our daily lives in a productive and efficient manner. This rationalization plays out on the governmental, the organizational, and even the individual level. As long as we as individuals follow formalized and standardized procedures and use them to make transparent calculations and reach sensible conclusions, our actions are generally defensible, that is, they are acceptable to others and seen as legitimate. In other words, they are considered to be rational. And the same is true for organizations, businesses, or government agencies. So when I'm grading an exam, for example, and I do so by the book, that is, I follow a standardized grading scheme, I'm basically fine, and probably also faster than I would be without it. So my time is efficiently spent, and my department can use me for more tasks. Moreover, as soon as I follow my intuition and depart from the grading handbook, I may not only be less efficient, but I may also run into other problems like students complaining about my subjective and untransparent grading. Or think back to the therapist from the beginning, who reaches a diagnostic conclusion based on her intuition and years of experience that cannot be entirely rationalized through the quantitative test scores and the checklists in the diagnostic manual. She could perhaps get into trouble with a welfare state agency or an insurance company because she hasn't fully rationalized her assessment. Even in the world of sports, you can see how athletes' performances are increasingly measured through statistics. Statistics that are then used and presented by TV broadcasters to create narratives around players and to evaluate them. However, one can also question if the numbers tell the entire story and wonder if it's possible to completely quantify an athletic performance. And to give you one last example, think about the many, many videos on social media about life hacks, nutrition recommendations, or financial advice, in which influencers or other professionals or experts present you a list of 5 or 3 or 10 things that you must do in order to land your dream job and lead a healthy, successful, and effective life. You are confronted with checklists that will optimize your professional development, improve your health, and maximize your financial gains. Lifestyle coaches and other self-improvement gurus are continuously telling you that you can get more out of your life and maximize your potential. As an amateur musician, I also get constantly spammed with videos from industry professionals who advise me about my upcoming release and tell me to follow these 5 steps if you want to have a successful single release or whatever. It is this endorsement of the standardized checklist with the goal of being as efficient as possible and to maximize the outcome that unveils the rationalizing spirit of these types of videos and the people who create them. We are surrounded by social media agents of rationalization who tell us that it is good to be efficient and remind us to optimize and maximize. At the same time, they also tell us that it is bad to be inefficient and to let opportunities for growth and improvement pass by. There is, in other words, a moral quality to it. Being efficient and maximizing your potential is morally superior to being inefficient and not maximizing your opportunities in basically all spheres of life. The rationalized society moralizes efficiency and constantly reminds us to practice an ethic of improvement and optimization. So, what all of these examples have hopefully shown you is that the rationalization of society can often be described with a few core buzzwords like effectivization, optimization, standardization, calculation, quantification, and even predictability. Why predictability? Well, simply because standardized, formalized, and quantified procedures promise to provide us with advanced calculations that help us to foresee the possible wins and risks of our actions, which is important if we want to make a rational decision. A good example are so-called risk analyses that are often done by organizations and companies before they start a new project or implement a new policy or make a big financial investment. A risk analysis helps a company to identify and anticipate potential events or situations that could have a negative impact on an organization's goals and its overall well-being. The goal of a risk analysis is not only to lay out and understand the potential risks of a new policy or investment, but also to estimate the likelihood of the outcomes to occur. To do so, risks are often quantified, which means that you may assign probabilities or, if it's a financial investment, monetary values to those risks to get a better understanding of their potential impact. This can be a very complex and time-consuming process that requires a lot of expertise. As I researched this piece, I even discovered that there is an international scientific journal called Risk Analysis, which is dedicated to this very issue. Anyhow, eventually a risk analysis allows the organization to minimize the risk of potentially negative outcomes by, for example, suggesting additional strategies to handle the most likely negative effects or develop backup plans if one of the lesser desirable scenarios materializes. All of this is a crucial aspect of what is often called strategic planning and shows you why predictability is another core feature of rationalization. In order to make rational decisions, organizations, but also individuals, need to predict the potential outcomes that a new policy or investment may bring. Risk assessments are, at their core, attempts to calculate the future in order to control it. Now, we can also see such predictive calculations in warfare. Before, say, a drone strike is ordered, the military leaders are supposed to make a calculation of potential casualties and then, according to humanitarian law, they are obliged to weigh if these casualties can be justified by the potential gains. So even warfare requires the rational calculation of costs and benefits, and the costs, here, predicted casualties of a drone strike, they must be proportionate to the military advantage that this drone strike might bring. And this is not a voluntary act. It is required by international humanitarian law. Rule 14 of the customary international humanitarian law states, quote, "Launching an attack which may be expected to cause incidental loss of civilian life, injury to civilians, damage to civilian objects, or a combination thereof, which would be excessive in relation to the concrete and direct military advantage anticipated, is prohibited." So the law is basically asking military leaders to make a calculation regarding costs and benefits and to be prepared to defend their actions on the grounds of this rational calculation. And already at this point, I think we can make a very important observation about rationalization. It's everywhere. It is a holistic, all-encompassing feature of our society. It reveals itself in all spheres of life, certainly to different degrees, but nevertheless, it's everywhere. Rationalization is codified in international humanitarian law, it is practiced by organizations in form of risk analyses, and at the same time it can also reveal itself in the smallest details of everyday life. Maybe you have noticed that many newspapers are now adding the estimated reading time for their articles, somewhere around the headline, in their digital outlets. So you, the reader, can decide whether the article is interesting enough for you to invest that amount of time. Even this is an attempt to allow you to make a sensible, rational decision in terms of a potential time investment based on a very simple quantitative calculation. So you are treated like a rational person who wants to make a rational and efficiency-based choice. And from a sociological point of view, if society constantly treats us this way, that is, if it constantly treats us like beings that want to make these calculative, rational decisions, well, we may end up internalizing this constant feedback from our social milieu and eventually become those rational and methodical actors that the rational society thinks we are, or at least wants us to be. So there is a kind of feedback loop between how we are treated by our social environment, how we learn to behave, and what we learn to appreciate. And this feedback loop enshrines this formal rationality as one of society's guiding principles and values. And here I think we can end our first journey through the fascinating world of the rationalized society. I really hope that these initial reflections and examples have given you a sense of what we sociologists mean when we talk about the rationalization of society. Throughout this podcast series, I will present and analyze more examples of rationalization in our contemporary society, and I will delve much deeper into those examples than I have done in these introductory remarks. We will explore topics such as the rationalization of sport and music, as well as the potential impact that artificial intelligence may have on society's ongoing rationalization. Spoiler alert, I think it will accelerate it. I will, of course, also attend to the major forces of our time, such as capitalism, science, and technology, and explore their rationalizing power. But before we do that, let's first explore the origins of the concept of rationalization. In the next episode, I want to answer a very simple question. It's a crucial question for this podcast. Where does the idea that our society is rationalized come from? Or, to frame it in a fancier and more academic language, what is the history of the idea that our society is rationalized? I hope that this little prologue has caught your interest and that you'll join me as I attempt to answer this seemingly straightforward yet quite challenging question. Thank you for listening. I'll hear you soon.